I would say the biggest misconception is one is going to replace them, right? I think that's been a subject area that everyone's been kind of like, well, if we add this into the workflow, is it removing the human in the loop process? No, right? I mean, objectively, you're having an augmentation strategy in order to help the checks and balances is one piece, but increase the efficiency, right? The overall operational efficiency of what's going on for the clinician, and then also for that healthcare system is the main objective of adding these tools in there. And then being able to help drive that forward, I think is the important point. So that insight there, I think, is where we've got to help delineate and also structure and create enablement and adoption of those solutions, right? These clinical AI applications that exist, all of them are obviously requiring end users to understand how to actively use it correctly. And I think it comes down to the product developers that are making those, but also comes down to, are we making an impact to the workflow that's actually going to enhance it and not create another segmentation, if you want to say?
Hello, welcome to the podcast of the American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine. Today, it's my pleasure to interview a true leader in AI and medicine, Justin Ramsaren. Now, Justin has so many accolades, but the thing I want to start off with is in 2024, he was listed as one of the 30 under 30 nominees for being a dynamic leader in digital health. He's a CEO, he's a vice president of digital health solutions for Fukuda, a Japanese medical device manufacturer. And he has engineering background. Just some key points about Justin. He's a digital transformation in healthcare leader. He's spearheaded Fukuda Kanis platform. He has been innovative in healthcare informatics solutions. And he has spoken at places like Texas A&M, Forbes Council Insight, has been on numerous other podcasts, and we can go on and on of all his accolades. He did complete Harvard Medical School AI and Healthcare program, which I did as well last year, as many other programs in Florida. But it would take me probably the whole time to go through all your accolades, Justin. Two things we have in common. One is our passion for AI and medicine, and the other is that we completed this, what I think is one of the best certification programs out there through the Harvard Medical School. So, but let's kick it off with, tell us about how you got involved with AI and healthcare, just your journey to this point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Again, I'll say it's a pleasure to be on the show here with you today, Mel. And being able to speak as a key opinion leader, I think, in the space too is going to be awesome here. So I'll give you a little bit of my background, just as you've got so graciously done there, and take you through my journey, where we're at. So I had the ability, I would say, over the last 10 years or so to be involved in the digital health space. And in doing so, I think I've watched a lot of different changes and transformations from point-to-point solutions to fragmentation within the industry of different data sets. And then just what happens, right, in that care continuum, from, patient, or what they're calling womb to tomb, from when the patient, enters into a facility to the medical device standpoint, to understanding where the connectivity occurs. And in doing that, right, and watching that care continuum, that journey itself has been unique from going on the device manufacturing side. Again, noting some of my experience there with Fukuda as the VP, really and truly understood where connectivity was, right, on the device standpoint to integrate, but also where the enhancements were to occur on the outside of that. And that to me started the journey, if you want to say, towards AI, towards data. And then towards understanding, right? Going from this idea, and I'd say it's a prime ideology of data projects to a data strategy. And that is a unique facet I think we're all looking at this current day and age. And that transformation that goes on in healthcare, but that's also occurring, and, on the product sides, the platforms and all those, but you've got to make a holistic ecosystem to let that hospital or healthcare facility, right, understand that journey too. So taking us through that dynamic, I would say that's kind of the evolution of going device side. Understanding the connectivity, the backgrounds I had with biomedical engineering really enhanced that for me. Painting that picture from a data structure side of where we get the data from, devices and other modalities in healthcare to the EHR, that was what we thought was the end point. But the enhancement now in the last 5 years, I guess, say in my journey professionally as well, has been we've got this data. Now we have too much of it. And we need to structure it and make sense of it. And honestly, practice better data hygiene in order to help amplify next generation systems. And that's important, right? When you look at the systems of AI, and it's a very simple principle, garbage in, garbage out, right? If we don't have good data in, you're not going to have good AI at the end. You're just going to have a lot of subjective bias and many other downstream problematic systems, which causes fragmentation and more downstream, complexities in nature. So, in doing so, I think that's been the predicate of how we've gotten here, and how, again, my journey's taken me to this point of how do we create these better data systems and better data strategies. From legacy systems to now proactive systems for the future.
Yeah, now there are over 1,000 FDA-approved AI algorithms that any of us can use as physicians. It's really the healthcare leadership that has to authorize and purchase access to these algorithms for any health system. Now, from your perspective, what's the biggest misconception that healthcare leaders have about integrating AI into the clinical workflow?
I would say the biggest misconception is one, it's going to replace them, right? I think that's been a subject area that everyone's been kind of like, well, if we add this into the workflow, is it removing the human in the loop process? No, right? I mean, objectively, you're having an augmentation strategy in order to help the checks and balances is one piece, but increase the efficiency, right? The overall operational efficiency of what's going on for that clinician, and then also for that healthcare system is the main objective of adding these tools in there. And then being able to help drive that forward, I think is the important point. So that insight there, I think, is where we've got to help delineate and also structure and create enablement and adoption of those solutions, right? These clinical AI applications that exist, all of them are obviously requiring end users to understand how to actively use it correctly. And I think it comes down to the product developers that are making those, but also comes down to are we making an impact to the workflow that's actually going to enhance it and not create another segmentation, if you want to say?
Yeah, so well stated. Now, before I launched this not-for-profit American College of Artificial Intelligence and Medicine, I was a professor at the University of Illinois College of Medicine, Division of Academic Internal Medicine. And my mentors there in AI really focused on having me learn the complex terminology that's associated with what we do as a starting point. And now we teach around that. But there's one term that I want you to clarify for our listeners called open connected architecture. When someone like yourself refers to that, what does that really mean? Can you give some examples?
Sure. When we look at like an open architecture, right? This is down to the essence of how can we create a leveled playing field where information and data is exchanged in, again, it doesn't need to be a standardized format or a unified format, let's call it that. And we kind of see this disconnect, and we'll call it the two big players. And there's been changes, right? We've watched the changes in industry, and we'll note these here is you've got your Cerner and Epics, right? We're all familiar with them, the large EHRs, the behemoths of the industry, and there's small other players within that space too that exist in the EMR space, but they don't speak the same language, obviously, right? If you've got patient records in Cerner, Well, they're probably not going to make their way to an Epic system, and you're not going to see them in my chart without a large, complex system that's going to integrate that, right? I think you can call that an EDI at that point, Exchange Data Interface. Costs us thousands of dollars, it's very expensive, tedious process, all these things in there. And the concept of an open architecture is being able to bring those two systems together under a unified platform or a unified, again, architecture where they can exchange that information and be able to pass that through to other healthcare networks and systems. And I'll call out these two things we've watched in the last 6 months come to fruition. It's called TEFCA and the QHIN, right? QHIN, this delineation is what's known as the Qualified Health Integrated Network. And many of these large healthcare facilities are now signing up and onboarding and becoming certified to be a qualified integrated network where they can start creating the standardization between those different EMRs. And that's a big deal, I would say, for our industry as a whole, because this open architecture that we may have preached about, gone and prophesized, say in the last couple of years, is an actuality. It is in the process. And the TEFCA piece, right, to that acronym that stands for Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, that is that open capability now where we're creating a framework for qualified integrated hospitals that are on board that platform to create a data exchange that when patients move their information across the care continuum, again, be it at a Kaiser Permanente to an NYU Langone that are two complete different systems, you've got the ability to see into that patient's record and at least have the information to create proper care. So when I look at open architecture, it is the ability to create a leveled playing field and then aggregate that information in a unified way that, again, all parties can see and actively move that information across the continuum.
Absolutely. Thanks for clarifying that. Now, in my own practice, I was an inpatient physician for over 25 years as a hospitalist, one of the very first in the nation. Then, more recently, I did outpatient at the University of Illinois in their outpatient academic internal medicine center. And even during COVID times, I did some home visits, like literally going into the homes to care for patients as well. So my point is, I've done inpatient, I've done outpatient, I've even done home visits. And I love all of those spaces to care for patients. They're all amazing. But how do you see AI shifting those traditional boundaries between inpatient, outpatient, and home care over the next 5 years?
Let's see. That's a good question, truthfully. I think we're going to see the shift in the home health market, as we've already progressively seen, where your detections and information insights start to become your initial level of triage. And I think we have to obviously have some coordination with the FDA on certain products that are considered those class two medical devices, like you would see in a typical facility. And then being able to aggregate that information correctly. I think those are the important parts is the inpatient, outpatient side and home health are all their own data silos, but also their own operational workflows as well. And we haven't bridged that gap fully. Inpatient and outpatient, I think, has transformed and started to make that leap progressively. But from the home health market and then bringing that information back into a facility is where we're trying to understand how that progresses. Now, where AI starts to fall into it, and where we start to see those data systems, it truly comes down to how we start to create those data structures. So if again we have this, call it again, open architecture or a unified data set, we would understand that a home health device that's tracking somebody's, let's call it heart rate or non-invasive blood pressure, isn't a standard data format that can be viewed and brought into, let's call it an Epic chart, right, at the healthcare facility. And then that way we know, hey, it's charting parameters in, we're able to track that information. And that propels forward this nuanced area of where AI starts to go because we've got structured data, real-time data, and that's another powerful asset we have in our hands is real-time information. And that to me is where we go from this reactive style diagnostic area of medicine where we're looking at things post, Again, when you look at information in the EMR, it's charted afterwards, right? I mean, the data's in there, we can see it retrospectively. But information that we can have in real time, be in that home health market, and we're viewing that, correlating that with even, again, past information, predictive models can start to play. You may be able to start understanding from that home health device down to the prior patient's record that's sitting there at the facility of, hey, is this, tachycardia, bradycardia that could be occurring to this patient in their own home, and start alerting earlier in the process if things start to trend in a matter. So that ability to unify, right, these kind of different areas of what goes on in our care continuum, and then aggregate that data, structure it, you can start to look, I think, at proactive medicine, in that essence of AI.
Now, Justin, I speak at medical schools and at hospitals about the literature, the evidence, the studies on AI. And what I'll tell you is that most of the studies that I speak about to teach doctors shows how good AI is at predicting things. And the ones that are amazing algorithms that are going to save lives, they do so by predicting, for example, if someone's going to go into septic shock. What role does predictive analytics play in empowering physicians with analyzing this data?
I think it plays a huge role, right? I think, again, this is meant to be a tool, right, that helps enhance the clinician's perspective, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the clinician is the human in the loop, and they are the ones that are making the final decision. They can pick to use what the AI is giving them or not. Right. I mean, that's just the real realities of it. But I do think because of the way you look at how AI is building and these, LLM models and the way that RAG models are created to aggregate data and then build these ways for machine learning on top of that, that starts to help enable a better decision process. It's thousands of data points, right? I mean, if a clinician sat down and tried to look at a large patient population to the nth amount, it'd be difficult in order for them to start saying, we're seeing this trending information because it's, again, past information. The real key is you're getting that real-time telemetry detail, right? You're getting that data in time, and you're able to see that predictive model because of the trending information of multimodal data sets. And that creates, again, this capability to see where you have predictive analytics. It's not one static parameter where we're just tracking, let's just say, ECGs alone. But if we took ECGs with labs on top of it and, let's say, ventilated data, hypothetically, we could bring all three of those together, right, with a multimodal data set and start to look at these different ways the patient trends to create that predictive, a model or that predictive analytic that creates the insight. Enhancing the way the clinician has data, just like we've done in data science, just like we've done in development, right, for years beyond this space, I think empowers the clinician's decision because they're getting a full picture of the patient, not just one data point at that standing.
Right. Now, as you know, every academic medical center is currently building an AI-powered healthcare platform. Now, you had mentioned the human-centered perspective. What is the critical success factors for a hospital or health system when they're building a new AI-based platform?
I'll tell you, my personal opinion is remove the silos early and fast, right? And again, as I described my journey into this space, I noted that I was part of the problem on the manufacturing side, not just because of the, not on the device development, but how we were a point-to-point solution. And on the development side, we had developers, but the developers weren't talking to clinicians, or clinicians weren't talking to developers, just like the business teams weren't talking, vice versa. Unifying that process, I think, earlier as we all go down this journey in healthcare, I think is incredibly important. Because if the business isn't seeing the ROI, the investment dollars aren't going to go back to the development. And if the clinicians aren't able to get what they need, you've just built another faulty product or a point-to-point solution that doesn't look at the holistic ecosystem of what needs to occur specifically for your healthcare facility or your patient population. So reduction in silos, I think, is the number one point I'll call out there. And bring everyone to the table, right? I think IT and biomed should be in the conversations because they've got to manage devices. They need to know the systems that you're looking for clinically. IT, at the end of the day, it's going to fall back on their backbone because they have to help manage and deploy the solution. And then your developers, your clinicians, and business folks all need to be at the same table with those groups in order to say, hey, this is what we see is important. This is what we can see in order to help future-proof our system, but also it meets an actual need rather than just building in vitro and not being able to help grow the actual capabilities of that data that's coming in or being utilized.
I love, Justin, that you say eliminate silos. That is such a wonderful pearl for our listeners. And in our organization, that's really what we're all about. So I'm trying to create a collaborative community of physicians and computer scientists and biomedical engineers and healthcare leaders. It's like you check the boxes on a lot of those yourself. So that's why it's great speaking with you today. But the whole idea of a physician interacting with others who are building these systems is key. Now, how do you approach balancing the innovation with regulatory compliance and data security? And the reason I bring that up is not a day goes by that I don't listen to or am part of something relating to compliance of regulation, governance, ethics, security, cybersecurity. This is literally every day, multiple times a day. This is really, I would say, truly at the forefront of thought in AI and healthcare. So, what's your take on this?
It's important, right? I'll say it. It's important without a doubt. Does it create friction? Absolutely. I've been on both ends of it. I've been the compliance security person and the other side of why do we need this? I just need to get this out so we can do something better. But truthfully, we have to find and strike the correct balance between the two. I think security is always going to be important, right? Patient data, PHI, HIPAA, all of those fun things. Make or break a system, right? The last thing we want to do is create a complete new data set or a complete new data architecture, if you want to say. And in doing so, we increase the vulnerabilities to our health system as a whole. It's prevalent. It's always going to happen. And I think it's a simple process, right? I think everyone may be familiar, have heard the term SDLC, your software development lifecycle. Again, bringing the correct parties to the table earlier when you're developing a product, when you're having those conversations, is the enhancement, right? Is before you develop this, make sure that you're shifting left, is what the term's normally called in the security process, where you're embedding security earlier in that development cycle, not as an afterthought. And I've been on that side, right? I've been on the product side where we've developed. And the security was an afterthought, and it was such a hard lift and shift to then backpedal the product to do the correct portion we needed to meet compliance. So integrating earlier helps reduce the amount of after effects for risk mitigation, where you're forced into a pigeonhole, if you want to say, where you aren't able to put the product you want to market. But it's important. No matter the fact, because if we don't have the compliance, we don't meet current regulations from an FDA standpoint, we don't know if we're actually reaching the core points of a product that's going to meet, our clinical users where they're needing to be at. And then again, come back to the security area. The last thing we want to do is expose ourselves in an area that we never had exposure before with new technologies and never have thought about. And that's happened, right? We've seen that, and we don't want to repeat history in the same nature. So shift to the left and embed that security, compliance, and those regulatory areas earlier in the process. That way, when you put products out, or we get to this downstream portion, we know we've done our homework correctly.
Well, thanks for that advice. Now, I want to talk about legacy systems. So, you're not going to believe this, but because I've been practicing a long time, my first EMR system that I used for a very long time at the hospital was called Meditech. It's really one of the oldest ones, followed by Cerner, and now we use Epic. It kind of shows you the evolution over time of what were the popular systems. But what advice would you give to a healthcare organization trying to modernize a legacy system without disrupting patient care?
That is a very good question. Complex in nature, right? I would say in a few ways. Funny, worked with the Meditechs of the world and all of them, so it's always interesting to watch it. The biggest thing comes down to proper planning. I'll say that. I think we talked about data projects first, data strategy. Come up with a cohesive strategy. Doesn't need to be done all at once. But we also don't need to segment it where these small projects get left out and aren't integrated fully. And I think that comes down just to, like we noted earlier, removing those silos, right? Get the right players in the room, the key decision makers inside your guys' internal facilities to know what is next and not look at piece of the puzzle and try to determine that full scope. Let's say you want to upgrade EMRs, right? Again, you noted going from Meditech to Cerner to Epic, right? And it's tough because we know university style hospitals, I know larger IDNs, those integrated delivery networks, have the dollars to spend, quote unquote, but have the capability also to, lift and shift their systems progressively versus rural access hospitals, critical access hospitals. The dollars are tighter on budget. But I do think that investing in the correct tech stack and understanding the tools you're going to be putting in place is important. Understanding how do we streamline if we're going to upgrade and lift and shift the systems, extremely valuable. And then just looking at that care continuum, right? From new devices, let's say for instance, down to a new EMR, even down to, revenue management systems. Do we look at this as we buy one whole vendor that's going to be a turnkey comprehensive solution? Do we have multiple vendors that are able to meet that solution? We're watching the industry go away from, again, point-to-point solutions that meet small needs to comprehensive, right? Turnkey solutions. So if the Epics of the world, as we've watched them, they do come in with a comprehensive turnkey solution where they say, hey, we will integrate X, Y, and Z. And they've got customization. That's been kind of where the future's starting to move. And some of the portions with the Meditechs that have been out there is they developed module-based solutions, which has done their business valuably well over time, but they now have to lift and shift again their products to meet the newer demands of the future as we've watched them kind of increase their connectivity. So suggestion I would say is you got a legacy system, understand what can be replaced. Understand what can be optimized, and then where can you increase your clinical workflow operational efficiency by looking at that entire cohesive data strategy and not looking at it as a project and stair step each one of those pieces to meet the overall demand at times.
Now, how do you envision AI helping to personalize care journeys for patients with chronic diseases?
I think we'll see that investment and that change for precision health, right? I think precision medicine is here. We started to see it in small ways, full body scanning of people with MRIs has been a huge one. I think it's been a big note in the last year or two. People want to know that they're cared about, I think is what's been the biggest thing, and that them as a patient is unique. And we all are, right? Everybody's unique in their profiles. Every single human is unique in the way that they may have certain symptoms, certain diagnoses. And I think that's an incredibly important piece. And where the AI portion will start to come in is we'll become, I wouldn't say profiled, right? It may not be the correct word per se, but each one of us, as we have data that's insightful to us, that becomes the way that AI and data systems can create these proactive models uniquely, right, for each one of us. And that in itself, for precision medicine, and even down for an end user, I know that I'm being cared for based on specific things about myself that I have shared. And again, that needs to be done all in a compliant, secure manner and all those fun things. But that to me is where we can start individualizing and personalizing health and also kind of reducing, our clinicians being stuck at a terminal, right? Entering notes all the time. I think if you provide that insight and information with the checks and balances, the area of precision health increases, and then that AI system helps create those proactive prognoses and diagnoses. And then again, the human in the loop of the clinician can spend the time with the patient to do the portions that we know AI is not going to do. Have that emotional empathy, understand where the patient's at, but also be the, hands, eyes, and ears that they need to be to make the correct decision based on the information that's been given to them. So enhancements, I think, on both sides on precision health, all right, and then the ways that chronic health is going to be managed with that as well will then come down to the way clinicians are incentivized with the information they're given, in order to help increase the way that they do their diagnoses in a more proactive manner.
Justin, if you could leave our listeners with one call to action about the future of healthcare technology, what would that be?
One call to action, I would definitely say stay educated right now, right? I think we're at the crux of the industry as a whole, and we have to all be aware of what's in front of us and stay up to date with every single piece of the industry. And I think we need to remove the silos. So removing those silos and staying educated, I think will help enhance where every single person is, be it a clinician, be it even down to a software developer. The more that we can unify that, the more that we can remove those silos and increase the way that we can cross-functionally collaborate, I think will enhance where we go from today to tomorrow.
Justin, this was an amazing conversation. You are truly a superstar in all of this, and we are delighted to have had the chance of talking with you. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. We look forward to future collaborations with you in the AI and healthcare space, and it was great having you. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Appreciate the time, guys. Thank you so much, Mo.
If you enjoyed what you heard here today, consider becoming a member of our professional society by going to www.americancollegeaim.org and click join. Also, don't forget to save the dates. September 19th and 20th, 2025, we'll be having our first ever scientific session at McCormick Place right here in Chicago. Go to our website to register to attend the conference. We hope to see you all live in Chicago, and we look forward to having you tune in to our next podcast on Melvin Monday here on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube.